It's that vibe you're haunting me dancing to. Let it be. Oh, yeah.
We're here at Kelsey Creek Farm, the ever so nice Kelsey Creek Park, recording the Revolutionary Sports Show. I'm Brian Duchesne.
And I'm Corey Sullivan.
It's been a while, but we're back.
Finally.
For all of our iTunes listeners, blow it up. Tons of iTunes downloads. But we're just going to start it off with the MLB playoff races. I think the Mariners, the Mariners don't have a shot. I was just messing with you guys, all the Mariners fans out there. But breaking it down, I think the AL, way more fun to watch right now than the NL. NL, it's pretty locked up besides the wild card. They've got, you know, maybe the first and second wild cards can flip, something like that. But the divisions are pretty locked up. We got New York Yankees in Toronto. That's fun to watch. 2.5 game lead by Toronto going into tonight. And KC has it locked up. Let's be real here. AL Central, terrible right now. It started out pretty competitive, went downhill. The Tigers, the White Sox. I guess we can even mention the Indians in there, but it's just terrible right now. KC just locked it down, and, you know, they're just looking real good up 10 games. Texas, Houston, LA. Corey, run us through the AL West here. We know the Mariners are out of it, and Oakland is out of it. You got the Angels, you got the Rangers, and you have the Astros all competing for the wild cards for the division. It's just a big mess there, so run us through the AL West.
I think that the Mariners made a nice, strong push at the end of the year. Finally, it was nice to see the team do good, but it's always just too little, too late here in Seattle. So they're out of it, but it was nice to see the Astros and Angels go at it today. Earlier today, the Angels picked up a very big game for them, as there's, you know, I think 10 games left in the season for most teams. The Angels have an extra one, so they picked up a game from the Astros, who was holding down that last wild card spot. So they're only a game and a half out now with an extra game the Astros have already played. So that'll be a close one. I think everything else is pretty much locked up. It'll be between that last spot with the Astros and Angels. Texas has picked it up well lately. They came out of nowhere and stole that top spot from the Astros, who I don't want to say they've been free-falling because, you know, I watch the Mariners all the time. But it's been pretty close for a team that's been at the top of the AL, not even just the AL West. They've been at the top of the AL for the majority of the season. Now the Astros are falling off, and, you know, the Angels are picking up some momentum. Mike Trout's looking like the MVP all over again. Hit his 40th home run last night. Pujols is looking, you know, decent once again, and their team is coming around. Cole Calhoun, I think, did well today. That team is looking decent. I don't want to say they're looking great. Well, you know, when I think of great, I think of the NL Central right now. Is, you know, their top three teams would lead any division in baseball. That's absolutely crazy. The Cubs are back. Pittsburgh, I love Pittsburgh, but the Cardinals just look unbeatable right now. How do you feel about the playoffs in general? What do you think is going on over there in the NL?
Well, we got Pittsburgh and the Cubs both kind of locked into that wild card spot. They're both looking pretty good, and I never thought I'd see the day where I'd be saying the Cubs are in the playoffs. It's one of those things. It's like when the guy caught that ball and everybody ragged on him because the Cubs could have been or should have been, or it's always been a coulda, shoulda, why aren't they here? Now they're actually going to make the playoffs. The problem is they're only going to have one game to prove themselves, so that'll be cool to watch. And, you know, the other divisions, I just think everybody's locked in there. The New York Mets even coming out of nowhere. So I don't know. I think the NL is just like a big surprise this year. I didn't expect any of the teams that are really good to be in a playoff spot, really. Mm-hmm. But then you have the Mets leading the division. You have Pittsburgh, who I thought would be in the playoffs, but they're in a wild card.
Yeah.
But, yeah, I mean, it's...
So with this going on right now, who do you think is going to take the World Series? Or if you don't want to pick a World Series champion, I mean, I'm sure you'll pick a World Series champion, but who do you see coming out of the AL? Who do you see coming out of the NL? Who do you see winning it all?
I don't know, because I think I like Toronto. I like their team, but Toronto just doesn't have the pitching to back up their offense. They've got a massive offense. They do it every year, but they don't really have the pitching that I think can consistently keep them in games, really. So maybe they'll win the division. I don't really see them doing a whole lot in the playoffs, though. Maybe they can prove me wrong, represent Canada, and win a World Series. But I don't know. I like what I see out of the Yankees, too. Say they get a wild card spot, I think they could do some damage, but I never really want to pick the Yankees as my wild card favorite, so not really sure how to feel about that. And It's just the NL is really, really tough for me to pick a team because it's like the divisions are all locked up. The Dodgers, I picked the Dodgers, I think, last year. Didn't really work out too well for me. So I don't know. I can't really pick an NL team. I don't want to pick the Mets because the Mets are the Mets. So I might have to end up picking somebody like the Pirates.
I don't think the Cardinals have it in them, no.
The Cardinals usually come out of nowhere and end up doing some damage, but they also collapsed in the NLCS that one year to San Francisco. And, you know, they're hot and cold, I think. They can be real good in the regular season, playoffs, who knows. So I don't know. I think I would take one of the wild card teams if I had to choose, but I think St. Louis, definitely NLCS status, World Series. I don't know about it. So let's see. AL, I'll go with, man, it's tough. Kansas City. Take a risk here and pick Kansas City, and then I'll pick the Pirates from the NL if they win the wild card game.
I'll say I do like that Kansas City pick. I'm going to go with that as well. I like with the experience they have. They've been to the World Series now. They know what that's like. Although they weren't ready for it last year, obviously. They are a team that's pretty much the same. They're ready. They're another year older. They're another year wiser. They have that playoff experience, so you know what you're going to get with them in the playoffs. And I do love McCutchen. I love Pittsburgh. But I think one of these years, it's going to be the Dodgers that finally come through. And I think this might be the year. I love Pittsburgh. I think they have the best outfield. I would do anything to have that outfield in Seattle. But I just see the Dodgers finally pulling through and coming out with one. And in the AL, to be honest, no team is really that striking to me. KC, maybe. They're pretty good. But if there was another team that I also like, it would be either the Yankees or the Angels. I like those teams that come out of the wild card and they just are that much hungrier than the teams that have already made it. They've, you know, been playing for something to play for from now until, you know, however far they get in the playoffs. And most teams that lock it up, like let's say the Cardinals, for example, they've already locked it up. So they're not playing with the same intensity, the same, you know, day-to-day grind that a team that's just really trying to struggle to just make it to the playoffs. So I think that, you know, the Angels and Yankees have a great chance to do well in the playoffs, especially those home games for the Yankees. That porch over there in right field is going to be very nice for them come playoff time if they do make it that far. So we'll see. But I think it'll be KC versus the Dodgers in the World Series, and I think the Dodgers will finally win one this year.
So going with whatever team comes out of the wild card, pretty much.
I think so.
All right. And then speaking of the daily grind, somebody named Cam Chancellor is back on the Seahawks. He has ended his holdout. Corey, just run me through real quick, couple minutes here. What's your outtake on Cam Chancellor? What do you take out of his holdout? What's it going to be like now that he's back?
I think that nothing is going to change from last year. This year, I hope everything changes because what's going on this year is unacceptable and it's awful. But I don't blame Cam. I don't think that he's a bad guy. I think that it's exactly as he said. It's a business. It's, you know, he doesn't have a whole bunch of years to, you know, hit people as hard as he can. You know, you see people that, you know, are at the top of their game for a short time. You know, Marion Barber with the Cowboys was Marshawn Light. But, you know, even Marshawn, he can't keep running people over Adrian Peterson. Your run doesn't last forever. And so you have to get paid while you can. And how I don't agree with the holdout in general. It's, you know, you sign a contract, you play through that contract. If you felt like you were going to do better or you were worth more, you would have held out then and got paid more. But I also understand what he's done. He's come a long way since he signed that contract. When he signed that contract, that was his second year in this contract. 2 years ago, we were losing to the Falcons in the playoffs. Now, back-to-back Super Bowls, obviously a lot's changed. So I see where he's coming from in that sense, that he's worth way more. I mean, and we saw what he's worth in 2 games. Our defense was nowhere to be found. I mean, Sherman looks lost out there. Carey is, who knows what he's really like because he hasn't played with good safeties behind him. And Bailey's no good. Let's just call a spade. And Earl's trying everything he can, but our defense is lost without Cam, especially in the secondary. And now that he's back, I think it's great for him. I hope that the team doesn't hold it against him. I think that they're professionals and they are used to this, not as much as the public is, about how much of a business this is. I mean, we see the Seahawks play on Sunday and we worry about Michael Bennett jumping off sides and things like that, but we don't see, you know, behind the scenes how the front office treats these players. You know, it's like one day you're good, and the next day you're Mike Wallace getting cut, signing a big deal with the Dolphins, and then you're out of town in Minnesota the next week. So it's, you know, we hold the players to a different standard than we hold teams to. It's, you know, we're so happy to get a guy for a deal, and then as soon as the guy wants to leave or, you know, hold out for a contract extension, then he's the bad guy when really the front office is the one making all the money off of him. So that's how I feel about it. How do you feel about Cam Chancellor and this whole ordeal?
Well, I think his agent and him both knew that the Seahawks didn't really have the salary cap room to restructure his contract. So by him holding out, he knew that there was nothing that could come out of it.
Yeah.
He was pretty much just trying to make a statement, which I didn't really care for. And Rodney Harrison and Tony Dungy said on the Sunday night pregame show, he's the leader of the defense, and they're tired of hearing how much of a leader he is, and leaders do not hold out on their contracts and pretty much hang their teams out to dry. And I think they worded it better than I think anybody else could have. And I was watching it like, you know, I like what they're saying here. Rodney Harrison, Tony Dungy, those are my guys right now.
Yeah.
So I'm watching that pregame show, and it really made me think about what they were saying. And I was already bitter at Cam for holding out, and then when I saw that, it's like everybody kept talking about, we're missing a leader of our defense. He's the leader of our defense. But when you look at it, leaders to a defense don't hang their teams out to dry and say, good luck, everybody. I'm just going to go eat some Cheetos on the couch over here and, you know, just kind of sit back and watch the game on Sunday as opposed to being there. So, I don't know. I'm really bitter about it, him holding out and all that, because he knew from day one in his holdout he wasn't going to get more money from it. So, whether his agent was behind it, whether he was behind it, whatever, and then for him to come out to the media and say, oh, no, fans, I forgive you. What is there to forgive us about? He's the one holding out. We should be forgiving him. His team should be forgiving him. So he just kind of, the way he came out and was arrogant about it and after his holdout, I wasn't a huge fan. But now that he's back on the field, he can bring more fear to the opposing receivers and the opposing offenses because they're afraid that they're going to get demolished if they come over the middle rather than, you know, Deion Bailey or Deshaun Shedd being there, even though I like Deshaun Shedd's play against Green Bay. This Sunday, I wouldn't be super mad if they decided to bench Cam Chancellor for his actions, just to show him that, you know, you can't hold out and just to make a statement toward other players. But, I mean, let's be real here. They're facing a Chicago team with Jimmy Clausen starting. I don't know if you can say that with a straight face, but that's humorous. And the Bears' defense has looked awful this year. So I think if there's a game to do it, to make a statement, sure, all the fans would be kind of mad about it. We just got him back. Why aren't we playing him? But if I was the coach, I'd probably bench him just for showing the team up.
I also think that, you know, maybe he sat out because when he got hurt that week before the Super Bowl, he realized, you know, I'm not invincible. This game is tough. You know, it's you know, one week you're the man. The next week is, you know, that's the whole mentality of the Seahawks has a whole mentality in the NFL. Once, if you're out, it's the next guy up. You know, whoever's performing the next step. It's, you know, that's how Aaron Foster got famous. That's how Tom Brady got famous. There's people waiting to get their chance. And if Cam, I hope he doesn't go down again. I love Cam Chancellor. But, you know, if, let's say, Deion Bailey was to have stepped up and was ready for the call, or, you know, the guy we got for the Lions, I don't know who he is, but if either of those guys would have stepped up to the call, would have been, you know, Pro Bowl caliber right off the gate, nobody would have cared about anything that happened with Cam Chancellor. And so, in one sense, as a fan, I'm like, yo, obviously we need you. We're getting crushed. You know, Deion Bailey slipping on routes in crunch time. And in another sense, it's, yeah, this game is cutthroat. And, you know, if this is your only chance to get your money, if that scared you, if, you know, whatever, the injury, then, yeah, get all the money that you can while you can, because as soon as you're no good, they will cut you, and that's just the game. You know, it's like nobody's immune to it. It happens to the greatest players, to Brett Favre, to Jerry Rice, to anybody. If Cam was scared of that, then I totally understand. I totally agree with him, and although we weren't happy with it, it's him and it's his family that have to go through it, so, you know, it's just where it's at.
I mean, I can see where you're coming from there, and I don't really think Cam Chancellor deserves us to talk about him anymore after his holdout. I'm still, like, super bitter, so we're just going to keep rolling on with the topics here. College football AP top 10. You have Ohio State at number 1, Michigan State number 2, Ole Miss number 3, TCU 4, Baylor 5, Notre Dame 6, Georgia 7, 8 is LSU, 9 UCLA, 10 Florida State, and notable 13 Oregon. So is there a team say, in the top 10 that you don't believe should be there?
Well, not that I have anything against UCLA. I think that they should be there, but I read that Miles Jack got hurt in practice and is out for the year, and he is the man on defense. So if they drop out of the top 10, I can definitely see that. I'm not a huge fan of Josh Rosen, their freshman quarterback, but, you know, he can get better. I'd like there's other teams that are better. I think Oregon will move back into the top 10, that they'll move back up higher. They lost to a great Michigan State team, obviously, number two. You know, I know my guy Brian over here is very excited about that. That's his team. Connor Cook led Michigan State. Ohio State did not look very convincing against Northern Illinois last week. I will say that. But do they deserve to be in the top four, top five? Absolutely. I believe that if you are a champion of something and nobody has beaten you, then you're still the best. You know, I will say that about Golden State. I'll say that about Jordan Spieth. No, he didn't win. But if you're the best at something and nobody has unseated you from being the best, then you stay the best. And that's how I feel about even the Patriots right now. As much as it pains me to say, the Patriots are the best team. Nobody's unseated them. Nobody's beaten them. And until somebody does, then they will continue to be so. And I believe that about Ohio State. Another team that I don't know that will stay towards the top is TCU. I don't think they're a bad team. I just don't see them staying in the top four. I think there's teams that are better. I think Oregon is better than them. But, I think that Georgia is a decent team. I think that Texas A&M, although I don't see them going to the college playoffs, I think they're at least a top 15 team. They got Kyler Murray. Their freshman quarterback was number one quarterback in the nation. He'll make a couple appearances as the season moves along. But I think it's going to be a great year for college football. How do you feel about this top 10? And do you think there'll be any movers and shakers?
I think Baylor at some point is going to drop out of the top 10. I know it's kind of a risky thing to say right now since they're number five. Baylor, I don't like how they run their defense and all that, because their offense, they can put up 60 points and end up losing the game because their defense is non-existent. So if you're going to put Baylor in there at number five, I just don't see them doing too much. If they play a great defense and they crack down on Baylor's offense, there's nothing they can do to stop somebody else's offense. And maybe it's just me that I don't like the whole offensive powerhouse type and no defense, but yeah. I'd rather see like a team like Ohio State, Michigan State. Even Oregon's defense is porous, but they're not nearly as porous as Baylor's defense.
How do you feel about Alabama? Do you think they'll make it back into the top five, top four, two, one?
I'd say Alabama gets back to maybe like a 6 or 7, because we saw them last year, they kind of fell out of it and then crept all the way back up. Mm-hmm. So I think Alabama's not a team that's just going to roll over and kind of give away their spots in the top 10 and even the top 5, but I don't see Alabama being in the playoff, if that's what the question is. But
Alabama, do you think Ole Miss would take the next step after beating Alabama to move into that playoff spot?
I don't know if Ole Miss is going to be able to hold it either, but I just haven't seen enough out of Ole Miss yet. They have been good. They were good last year. They're just kind of one of those teams that kind of ride the top 10, maybe top 15, and then you're never really sure about them. So I don't know if they're going to be able to hold a number 3 spot. I say they finish the year maybe like 10 or 11, but do you think Ole Miss is rightfully number 3 and will stay that way through the season?
I think so. I think that they are a college playoff team. I like Robert Nimkadish. I like Laquon Treadwell. They're two of my favorites. They were two of the top of their respective side of the field in their class, and they continue to get better. With as much star power as Ole Miss has and with the amount of points they were able to put up on a great Alabama team, Nick Saban coach. I mean, if you can put up that many points on a Nick Saban coach defense, more power to you. But like I said, there's a lot of time left, first of all. None of the league games have started. Injuries, you know, although the worst part about the sport, they just haven't set in yet. So we'll see. But as of right now, on paper, they look like a great team, ready to make a deep run, experienced team, and they're looking good.
Interesting analysis on Ole Miss. I don't know if I can agree with it, but we'll roll right on with the Pac-12 minus UW, because we have a UW expert joining us on the show today. But Pac-12 in general, what do you see between Oregon, Stanford, USC? Who's going to emerge as that number one team in the Pac-12? Who's going to keep it? Who have you been impressed with so far?
I would have to say Arizona for sure. I've been impressed with them. USC, their offense is great, but Stanford pretty much exposed them last week. So that's about all they said about Sark. Sarkisian teams just feel like they're never ready for primetime. Every time a big game comes up with national implications, it's just lay down and roll over.
Yeah.
And I think Arizona, they have a new Solomon. Their quarterback is just getting better every year. And their running back, Nick Wilson, is also a baller. And they're a good team. Scooby Wright, their pride and joy on the defense, is back this week. Or at least he's practicing. I'm not sure if he'll be back, but that'll be big for them. And I see them, you know, winning again. They're a great team. And Oregon, Vernon Adams, I think, is a great quarterback.
Not Marcus Mariota status, so.
We'll see. I mean, Marcus Mariota is pretty good, so that's, you know.
Hard to compare.
Yeah, it's a hard comparison because Mariota is a baller even in the NFL. And I think that Vernon could be an NFL player, but. You know, we'll see. We'll talk about that after this season's over and that finger heals up of his. But I think Oregon has got what it takes. They always have what it takes there. You know, speed kills. Yep. And their running back, Royce Freeman, is a beast. If they could get Devin Allen back, they'll be as good as they were, as they have been. I think they could have beat Michigan State if they had Devin Allen. But, you know, they came close and they played close on a primetime game, and I think that if they can continue to do that, if they can continue to produce and play big in big games, that they'll definitely be a factor and definitely be up there with not just the Pac-12, but also the best of college football.
Yeah, I agree. I think Oregon's winning the Pac-12 this year. If I had to pick somebody to win it, Stanford, I think, can definitely compete with Oregon, but Oregon just played what's now the number two team in the country, and they took them down to the wire and
almost beat them.
If they put that pass in the right area, it definitely would have been a different game because Michigan State couldn't move the ball the last two or three series of the game. And I like what I've seen out of Oregon so far. Vernon Adams just, I feel like, needs to get more into the offense. And he looks pretty good considering he transferred from Eastern Washington. And
he doesn't really know the system, but he's,
exactly.
He's held his own for the couple weeks he's been on campus.
He looked pretty comfortable back there. So I'm going to take Oregon as my Pac-12 favorite, but who knows? I mean, maybe it'll be another one of those years where Stanford comes out of nowhere and beats them again. Even though Stanford does look real good right now, I don't see them beating Oregon personally, but
we shall see. You never know what's going to happen in this crazy game of football.
So speaking of the Pac-12, let's jump over and take a look at UW. For UW analysis, we welcome a huge Husky fan, student, and broadcaster, Luke Munger. And Luke, first and foremost, we've seen UW play three games so far, one in which they didn't look too good in the first half against Boise State. But then they regrouped both on offense and on defense, down 16-0, came back and ended up missing a game-tying field goal. Sacramento State was, well, Sacramento State. And the Utah State game was interesting, with Utah State hanging in there for a while before Chucky Keaton looked a little panicked after halftime and a little beat up due to the Huskies' pressure. So, Luke, what's your outlook so far after the first three games?
Honestly, through three games, I've been pretty impressed with what the Huskies have been able to do. One huge positive has been Jake Browning. He stepped in and shown that his talent translates very well to the college game. Also, that he has a lot of poise for a true freshman. He threw an interception to start the second half against Utah State last week, but then he came back and completed 12 of his next 14. So, yeah, Jake Browning, super impressive. Another thing that's impressed me, obviously, is the defense, allowing only 11 points per game. They're yet to truly play a great offense, and Cal will be a good test for them. But so far, through three games, I think the defense has been great. They're allowing less than 300 yards per game, so that's obviously good as well. One huge negative, I guess, that I've taken away through the first three games is the running game. Dwayne Washington, who I thought was going to step in and be just a really consistent threat out of the backfield after rushing for 425 yards in the last four games of last season, has really been nowhere to be found in terms of his production running the ball. He's made some impact receiving the ball. In just the Utah State and Boise State game, the Huskies are averaging less than 2 yards per carry in those two games, and that's really, really not good. So through three games, I guess that's probably what I've taken away the most. Also, the Huskies probably need either Dante Pettis or Braden Linnaeus, or Jadon Mickens for that matter, to emerge as a consistent 4 or 5 catch person per game, I guess. Joshua Perkins, I guess, or Daryl Daniels could do that at tight end as well, but the Huskies have yet to find that consistent presence as well. Other than that, very impressed with what I've seen from the Huskies.
You know, definitely. It's a new-look Huskies team this year as far as the quarterback position goes. So run us through how you think Jake Browning has differed from Siler Miles and why he was able to compete with Boise State as well as beat Utah State.
Yeah, I'd have to say Jake is probably just a better thrower than Siler Miles, as simple as that. If you look at athleticism just in terms of who's bigger, faster, and stronger, Siler Miles is probably the better athlete. But just in terms of throwing a consistent ball, having a nice, pretty compact motion, getting it out quickly with some heat on it, and consistently being pretty accurate, I'd say Jake Browning is just the better quarterback. He's also shown a lot of poise that has allowed him to, like you said, compete with Boise State. He didn't have a great game, but his best drive of that game was no doubt the final drive of the game, where we ended up getting to the 19 at one point before getting backed up on a holding penalty and then a sack that ended up pushing us to a 48-yard field goal that Cameron Van Winkle missed.
And in the run game, talk about Miles Gaskin a little bit and what he can bring that may have been missing last year.
Now, like you said, Miles Gaskin's been super impressive out of the backfield so far as a true freshman. And one thing that I think that's weird about that is if you look at an ideal athlete, Dwayne Washington is your guy. He's 6'2", 225 pounds, and he also ran a 4.4 40 in February when the Huskies did a couple of those tests with the team. So Dwayne Washington is a great athlete, but he just hasn't been able to get anything going on the ground, and that's just because he runs straight into the back of his blockers. He doesn't have a lot of vision or patience. That's where Miles Gaskin is truly excellent. He does have speed and he does have quickness, but his two best traits are his vision and his patience. He's waited for holes to open up. He's seen the holes when they've opened up, and then he's been able to quickly burst through them to pick up consistently pretty good yardage. So that's what I think I've seen from Miles Gaskin that's been able to make him so successful on the ground so far.
And lastly, the Huskies defense and your prediction for the season. I think the Huskies defense looked pretty good, but I don't think there'll be a match for Oregon or Stanford. I'll take the Huskies with an 8-4, possibly 7-5 record to finish the season. What's your outlook on the defense and your final prediction?
Yeah, like you said, Husky defense has been super impressive so far. In fact, they've yet to allow a touchdown pass. Now, I think that'll change this weekend when they play Jared Goff in California. And I think that's one thing that the Pac-12 offers that the Huskies have yet to see, and that is really good quarterbacks. Jared Goff pegged as a potential first-round draft choice. You look at other quarterbacks that the Huskies will be playing this year. Vernon Adams, you saw what he did last year to the Huskies when he was at Eastern Washington. Now he's at Oregon, a better offense. What can he do there? Right? Now they also have to play Cody Kessler at USC. Keith Hogan played very well against USC for Stanford, the fifth-year senior, and we know that he can do some damage. So Huskies, when they go into the Pac-12 season, we'll be facing a lot better offenses and quarterbacks in particular, and the Huskies just really haven't faced that yet. And Ryan Finley or Chucky Keaton or anyone that they've played this year so far. So, yeah, I think the Huskies defense is good enough to keep them in games, but I still think offenses like Oregon and USC, I think offenses like that will still put up a ton of points. And I don't think the Huskies offense with a freshman quarterback and an inconsistent run game are good enough to hang in there with those teams, regardless of how well the defense plays. So that being said, I'd probably peg the Huskies at 7 wins. They already have 2 right now, and I feel pretty darn good about them winning the game against Cal, and then Washington State and Oregon State as well. And then I look at 3 other games as potential wins: Utah at home, Arizona at home, and Arizona State on the road. I think those are 3 beatable teams. I don't think the Huskies will win all of those. I think Arizona State's probably the hardest game of those, considering it's on the road. The Huskies typically don't play very well in the state of Arizona, and it's hard to win in the Pac-12 on the road with a true freshman quarterback. But I feel pretty good about the Huskies winning 2, maybe even 3 of those games. But just to be safe, I'll peg them at 7 wins. Maybe we get lucky in a bowl game, but 7-5 through 12 games is probably where I think the Huskies will finish at.
Well, there you have it. Thanks to our UW expert, Luke Munger, for his analysis. And I'm looking forward to tuning into the UW game against Cal this weekend.
I'm pretty sure that UW are dogs. Get it? They're underdogs this week.
They got some dogs.
I think they're dogs this week. And man, that Browning kid is special. Watching with what he did that first game was phenomenal for, you know, Peterson returning back to Boise State. Even, you know, the next week that he played great as well. And for a freshman, a true freshman to start at UW, that's crazy. You know, they've had great quarterbacks: Tui Asosopo, Warren Moon. There have been some good ones that come through UW, and if none of those guys could start as freshmen, Browning is going to be something special, and it's going to be exciting to watch. I also think that they'll beat Cal. I think just with his passing ability and UW's not as good defense as it was last year, but still better than Cal's, I think that, you know, defense wins games, and I think it'll be on display on Saturday. 2 o'clock.
Can be an exciting matchup. I think that just about wraps it up for the Revolutionary Sports Show. And like we said, blow up those iTunes downloads, tell your friends, and we'll see you hopefully next week. It's been
too long
since we've done a last show, so I mean, we're back. It's official to say that we're back. I am Brian Duchesne.
And I'm Corey Sullivan.
And we'll catch you next time.